This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
Connections. Connections that we have with other people in this world. Sometimes emotions will come up when they shouldn't. In our next story, we hear of such a thing. Someone who's in a relationship with someone else who's in a relationship, just innocently, you know, kind of flirting and dancing together at a wedding and realizing there's more feelings there than either can act on. And they never do. And eventually it becomes too late. Did they do the right thing? Take a listen. Out of all the ghosts I've met in my life, this one is the hardest for me to talk about. It strikes me deeply and involves feelings and memories that I'd rather not remember at times. It happened in the spring of 1994. In fact, it was May. Life was very hard going then. I was working two jobs, trying to attend school part-time. My marriage was going through its rough final stages. And unknown to me at the time, I was suffering from the end-stage renal disease, which would result years later with having to have a kidney transplant. The simplest things of the day took Herculean effort to get done. Every night I'd go to bed exhausted, hoping that the next day would never come. My wife and I had little or no social life outside of her large family. We were constantly getting together for birthdays, anniversaries, weddings, and parties. I liked this part of our relationship. I also had come from a large family, but we never seemed to be as close as my wife's, and I truly admire that about them. Sherry was my wife's cousin. She was tall, had strawberry blonde hair and blue eyes. She had an aura about her that reminded me of old classic Hollywood movie stars such as Grace Kelly, Veronica Lake, or Doris Day. She stood out in the crowd. Not because she was beautiful, but because she projected a graceful elegance in my mind. People would look at her and just feel she was someone different. I used to visit Sherry and her husband, who was a policeman with the town. Tom was a nice guy. He'd always talk about his police work, guns, or life in our small town. My wife and Sherry would talk of arts and crafts and the myriad of things women talk about when men are not around. We clicked very well, and we'd get together when we could as often as we could. There came a time one season when one of my wife's relatives announced they were getting married. Plans were drawn up, invitations were sent, tuxedos were rented by those in the wedding party. The wedding itself went off without a hitch or need of a shotgun, and a happy chord was struck all around. The reception was being held in the same building, so the high spirits of the evening never had a chance to dampen. The crowd broke up into smaller cliques, and soon everyone had the circle, save for a few others and me, who just weren't socially inclined. My wife had joined a group of relatives that she hadn't seen in years and was busy catching up. I sat there as the dutiful husband, letting my mind wander about any number of things. Music started soon enough as the DJ began to play the night's long list of requested songs. Lights were dimmed, couples slowly began moving to the dance floor. My wife must have noticed my boredom. She wasn't fond of dancing like I was, so she suggested that I go out and do so. She pointed to Sherry, who was sitting by herself with her two children, and said, "I should ask her to dance." I didn't really need any more coaxing. It was nice to get away from the family conversations and do something different. I approached Sherry and asked if she would dance to a moderately slow song that was playing. Her children, while young, were old enough to let go, unsupervised, remained at the table, devouring ice cream and cake. We both kind of laughed because it seemed odd. We'd known each other for years and had done things together with my wife and her husband, but it was the first time we were face-to-face speaking as a man and woman to each other in a fairly intimate situation. I tried to say a few words that blurted out like silly lines from an old movie like, "Fancy meeting you here." It seemed so corny to me at first, but Sherry seemed to like it, and soon we were speaking like we were old friends. I asked her where Tom, her husband, was, and her face saddened, and she told me that they had separated and were filing for divorce. We hadn't visited them in a few months, so this was a surprise to me. She spoke of the problems that they'd been having, and I feel there's no need to write them here. Needless to say, she felt she couldn't go with it and asked for the divorce. I could empathize with her. My wife and I had been having our own troubles lately, but no one was to blame. It just seemed things were hitting us from all angles, and the pressures were tremendous. I listened as best I could over the music and gave advice as I knew best. Nothing I could say would make her feel better. But I think just having someone around to listen was all she wanted, and the one thing I knew I was good at was listening. Now, if the evening had just been about that speaking of problems and troubles, that would have been fine, for I thought that's what friends are for, and for a change, it was nice to hear someone else's troubles rather than dwelling on mine. But it seemed we couldn't stay focused on our problems. Our conversation started straying on things such as life and nature. She told me of things she liked, such as butterflies. Probably to most men, this would have been boring, but not to me. I grew up in the city and lived there most of my life. I loved the quiet countryside and now lived in and often go and take treks by myself into the woods and notice things like those little creatures, things that were not existent in my old world of gray and brown brick buildings. As we spoke and danced, I realized that we both shared a common love for the simple things and for simple beauty, things that most people there would have taken for granted, like the colors of the forest or a simple butterfly. I realized that her soul was much like mine, a seeker of peace and tranquility. She was being who was always watching the world around her in hopes of seeing a moment from God. I remember looking into her eyes and she smiled, and inside I shuddered because I realized she was thinking my thoughts. We smoke in smaller thoughts than knowing that we already knew what the other was saying. Soon enough, we were dancing closer than we should have been. Sooner than I could have imagined, the room was brightening and the DJ was saying goodnight with a casual reminder about the dangers of drinking and driving. Sarah and I pulled away from each other and she went to gather her kids. She joined my wife and I as we were getting ready to leave, and she thanked her for letting her borrow me for the night. We laughed at that and went our separate ways. Inside, however, I was sad that the night was over. If my ex suspected what I was thinking or feeling, she said nothing, and she spoke about all the things that were going on with the distant relatives she had become reacquainted with. I don't think I remember a single thing she said. I never saw Sherry outside of situations like that, at parties or weddings, and it seemed we had an awful lot of them that year. Generally, it would be the same. My wife would speak with her family, I would dance, most often Sherry would be my partner, and that would be the way it would be the entire evening. We'd speak of our lives and dance and then go our separate ways with no words spoken. I knew she hated parting as much as I did. It was the way things were and the way they were always going to be. Our families were deeply religious, and if we were to ever act on our thoughts, the scandal would have been like the sun exploding. So, though Sherry was free, I knew I could never act upon that, and she knew that as well. We'd always have to be happy with a few hours we could have together. That was the way it was until the fall of 93. One of Sherry's friends got married and she was asked to be a bridesmaid. We're seeing her that night for the first time in a peach-colored evening gown. She was stunning. Even now, after all these years, I feel my heart skip a beat thinking about it. I'd been in England during my Air Force career at the same time the wedding of Princess Diana and Prince Charles occurred, and I didn't feel it is an exaggeration to say she in that gown was an equal to the beauty of Diana. I couldn't keep my eyes off her, even if I tried, and every once in a while I would see her glancing over at me. I couldn't tell if her smile, she was pleased with the spell she had cast on me. The reception was held at Sherry's home, and everyone was drinking freely, save for myself because I had to drive some other friends home as well that evening. Again, rampant dancing broke out and loud voices carried through the home. More than one person stumbled and spilled a drink, but fortunately no one tried to wear a lampshade. I guess being home, Sherry felt it was safe to let go, and she had a good share of liquor as well. I didn't think much of it at the time, perhaps back then because I was pretty naive, but Sherry stayed close to me and seemed to be more than a little attentive. I think this is when my wife took notice. My wife, Jill, had very stunning green eyes. I think that's what really attracted me to her in the first place. When she smiled, they would sparkle, but when she was upset, they would flare. They were flickering now, a single alarm fire. I sighed, realizing that Jill was thinking, but I hoped she would realize in the end that Sherry was probably just a little drunk and didn't mean anything. If the evening had progressed without further incident, I'm sure it all would have been forgotten. But then lightning hit. Sherry came over, sat on my lap. It wasn't just a sit. She leaned back against me on my lap in a very sensual way, and her long legs peeked from under her gown in all the right yet very wrong ways. She hugged me tightly without saying a word. It was a hug you give someone when you think they're going off to war or about to climb the Himalayan mountains and never come back. I was at all odds inside. I so loved being touched by her that way, but at the same time, I was horrified and stunned, speechless. The flicker I saw on my ex was now a 4-alarm fire. I'm not sure, but I think the whole house went silent, but that was probably my imagination. It was an innocent flirtation, but with it, the little dream world we shared was destroyed. Nothing was said until me and my wife were alone. She didn't think it was my fault because I didn't initiate anything, but she swore we would never invite Sherry over again. All that night, I was racked with guilt and spent the night tossing and turning. Needless to say, we rarely saw her after that. Jill was avoiding her. Sherry was avoiding us. Never got the chance to talk to her about the incident. But I think she was extremely embarrassed and couldn't speak about it. I came to miss her as my life faded back into the dreary existence that it had been before. I tried to lose myself in the tasks and in my writings, but she was always there. On occasion, I would see her out shopping because it was a very small town. You couldn't help but meet everybody in time, everyone, so often. But these were bittersweet for me and maybe for her because I thought at times I could see a deep sadness in her eyes. Sadness that was probably matched by that which I felt in my own heart. Months passed, fall turned to winter. Then winter to spring, life had gotten back to normal. My wife and I had obtained a fairly content existence together, and things were seemingly brighter because the warm weather had removed the harsh gloom of that very cold winter. Life had gotten livable again, but my mind on occasion thought of Sherry, wondering, sometimes dreaming of what could have been. It was May 30th, and my wife and I had settled down to sleep as we normally did at around 10 each evening. We lay there watching the news and the Tonight Show for a few moments. I could hear my wife's breathing next to me. It was the first almost whisper of a breath at first, and then a soft sigh that told me she was asleep. With that, I checked the alarm and turned down the lights. It was about 10:45 or 50. I was fairly tired, and I'm pretty sure I was beginning to fall asleep when it happened. I perceived a light, or sensed it as I laid there. I opened my eyes and saw a faint, whitish glow that reminded me of a certain moonlit night when the moon is big and full and there's snow on the ground to reflect it. I opened my eyes wider and looked for the source. There at the foot of my bed stood Sherry. Standing there in the shorts, scrubs, the overcoat that nurses sometimes wear in emergency rooms. She was staring at me, and as she did, she broke out into a big smile and started waving. It was a gentle wave, the one you give when you're saying goodbye for a long time. As she did, she slowly faded from the sight until the room was as dark as before. As I tried to relate the story, I realized that I don't know where the light came from. It was as if it were casting itself out of her, even though she didn't appear to glow. The entire vision must have lasted only a few seconds, leaving me sitting there with my mouth open wide. I turned to look at the alarm clock, which now read 11:05. If I'd been asleep, well, I'm in for a few minutes, but there I was sitting upright in bed, and I never sleepwalked my entire life ever. I turned and shook my wife awake. I told her what I had just seen sleepily, and she told me I was dreaming. I should go back to sleep. Other times in my life, I'd heard that statement that I was dreaming, and I never believed it then, and I had doubts. I did lay back down restlessly, convincing myself that maybe I was dreaming, wishful dreaming. Next morning, we got up and prepared for the day. I heard the phone ring as I got out of the shower. Dressed, met Jill, and she approached me from the other side of the room. She was still holding the phone in her hand when she told me that Sherry had died the night before. She was killed in a car accident on her way home from the hospital she was working at. I didn't know it at the time, but she had gone to work several months ago as a nursing assistant trying to make ends meet. Her car broke down on the way home a few miles from her house. The police said it looked as if she was looking under the hood when the car's emergency brake failed and it rolled over her, pinning her down until the weight and heat of the car engine killed her. The accident happened approximately 11 o'clock the night before. I don't remember what I did next. Felt as though I'd been punched in the stomach by a sack of cement. I knew I had seen her the night before. I truly had. It became obvious. The world around me and I think I just went to the front porch and began to swing silently. As far as I knew, no one else had reported seeing her ghost that night. Days later, the funeral was held and we attended at the nearest Catholic church. I was surprised at the number of people who attended. I was very proud of my adopted family for all the support they were showing. The first row, there was a man who sat with Sherry's mother and father. I was told he was a boyfriend she had met 3 weeks ago. I felt so terribly bad for him, for I think only I could grasp what he had now lost. The service started and everyone sat silently while the rites and rituals of the ceremony took place. The priest was the only one to speak, and he said the usual things about how good a person she was and the loss everyone felt. Then he asked everyone to pray so that her soul would move on from purgatory and be with God in heaven. I winced when I heard that and grew quite angry. Sherry was in no such place. I knew that she had already gone to be with God in the space between spaces. The fact that he would dare suggest otherwise made me angry and set wheels in motion that over time would make me question religion as a whole once again in my life. Worse came the viewing, and I was reluctant to go. My wife convinced me to go with her. In all my life, I wish I had never done so. Try as he might, the mortician couldn't hide what happened to the once lovely woman. I knew it was not what I saw before my eyes. Even now, I have a hard time remembering it. Just wasn't Sherry. I told myself, here was just a shell. The service ended and we stood around the grave as the bells tolled. In this sad moment, I took heart that the sun was shining warmly and lighting the countryside around us. The flowers of spring were still blooming, and in the distance, those butterflies that we first spoke of were flying. It was beautiful, and the day suited her very well. I was able to say goodbye with peace in my soul because she, in her worst hour, had stopped on her journey to heaven to see a man who loved her from a distance and tell her goodbye.
This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
Want a commercial-free experience of the show with access to the world's largest audio archive of ghost stories? Sign up at Apple Podcasts right now and try it for 3 days free. GhostPodcast.com or Patreon.com/Real Ghost Stories.